In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
You walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. There is a video that forensically breaks down the mayhem surrounding the alleged murder of Alicia Babbitt at the Capitol building on January 6, 2021. Prior to this video, I believe this alchemical psychodrama actually happened. Now, after viewing this analysis and also having reviewed in depth the documentary titled The Boston Unbombing, the actress and their methods are again revealed. Methods include the implementation of what's known as squibs and moulage used in disaster training. With all respect, having this additional information, when the shirtless victim is shown on a gurney with one breast exposed, it can be seen more as an orchestrated Venetian ritual, personifying countless paintings and sculptures than the barbaric murder of a Trump supporter. Days later, the event was followed up by articles lauding the glass image of Kamala Harris positioned by the reflecting pool. This area of water holds the feminine energy, reflecting the male archetype obelisk. It's a basic analysis, and it doesn't take into account the encoded numerology, sacred geometry, and astrology. It's almost too much to take in when it's occurring. However, the deeper layers become clear to some after the fact. In our past interviews with guest Kent Bain, we examined the revelation of the method, ritual mockery, and default public consent brought by inaction. Author Michael Hoffman's related statement, quote, "consent fuels their control like no other form of energy," references when a populace still in shock from a spectacular violence finds it easier to pretend the official story isn't full of inconsistent details and suspicious facts found throughout any major false flag event. As each radical mass awakening is suppressed through censorship and false flags, will it be too late to stop the intended results of this long-in-the-planning ritual? As each radical mass awakening is suppressed through censorship and false flags, will it be too late to stop the intended results of this long-in-the-planning ritual? Kent Bain joins us to discuss his recent write-up titled The Great Reset, A Mass Ritual in Motion. It can be found on his site, themostdangerousblogintheworld.wordpress.com. Kent is the former art director of the Weekly Standard magazine, where he worked with William Crystal, Fred Barnes, David Brooks, Tucker Carlson, and others for more than 5 years. During part of that time, the Project for the New American Century shared offices with the publication, and next door was the Philanthropy Roundtable, where Bain art-directed for Philanthropy magazine. Kent Bain is the author of The Most Dangerous Book in the World, 9/11 as a Mass Ritual, Most Dangerous, A True Story, and Blackjack, The Dawning of the New Great Age of Satan, all published by Trinday. Kent Bain, welcome back to Another News.
It's good to be with you.
Kent, behind many of the events that have occurred in 2020 and that are planned for this year is the completion of a mass ritual. Your book, titled Blackjack, The Dawning of the New Great Age of Satan, references Washington, D.C. as a giant processional clock with an alarm set to go off by year's end. Would you please remind listeners about this reference for those who may not know about this book?
The Great Age is a 26,000-year period of time that's defined by the cycle of precession. I won't get into the details of that, but it's an astronomical scientific fact. It just, the Earth wobbles on its axis over a period of 26,000 years. It's also known as the Platonic Year or the Great Year, and it's at the heart of many mystery religions, the knowledge of this Great Age, the passage of this lengthy period of time as tracked by the zodiac that is, you know, nearly universal in all the ancient civilizations and cultures throughout the world. And this knowledge, you know, being at the heart of secret society beliefs, practices, mystery, religions, you know, is encoded in many places and in many different ways throughout the eons. And so it should be no surprise in that context to find in Washington, D.C., that it's encoded in many different locations and in a number of different ways, including the street layouts, the design of Washington, D.C. itself, the various monuments, sacred spaces, the alignments of the streets and the buildings. And it encodes not just the great year itself and provides a sort of a monumental, large-scale way of tracking the passage of time, but it also tells us when the great age comes to an end. And then, of course, it's being a cycle, which indicates the end of the current great age and the beginning of the new great age, which, as I discuss in my books, that is taking place this year and next year, the end of the old great age and the simultaneous dawning of the new great age is occurring at the end of 2021 and the start of 2022. And an interesting side note about that is that the number 222 is heavily involved in these encodings, and I won't, you know, give a lot of examples of that. I go through it thoroughly in the book, but that ties to, of course, the year 2022 itself. In numerology, we dropped the zero, and so 2022 is 222, and that's referenced in many different ways in Washington, D.C., and the encodings that point to this year, this very precise moment in time in history. And so we'll talk a little bit further as we move along about the ways that we find this information literally in the streets of Washington, D.C., the most powerful city in the world. But that's the great age in a nutshell.
While you were talking, I was thinking the other two cities, like Washington, D.C., the Vatican, and London, do they have similar encodings referencing the procession?
They do. There's some strong similarities. I have not looked at the other two cities and their monuments and layouts as extensively as I have Washington, D.C., and so they could all be, you know, have very similar encodings. Washington, D.C. has some very specific codings, and it's the numbers and the layouts that I have not yet seen in London and in Rome at the Vatican. The same general information is there, but then in Washington, D.C., there are some very specific markers and some very ingenious ways of pointing to a very, you know, to this moment in time that I have not seen in the other two. That doesn't mean they're not there. I just may not have uncovered them yet.
That would be an interesting direction to go, I would suspect, maybe for someone listening or maybe for yourself, Kent, in the future. You recently posted a nice write-up titled The Great Reset, A Mass Ritual in Motion, paralleling the research of Blackjack, your book, and the events of this past year. The World Economic Forum has named their project The Great Reset, which is aligned with your analysis of the new great age. Now, this level of confirmation is important for an investigative researcher into the esoteric, but it's also astonishing to see the lining up of celestial and megalith arrangements on this scale. And we've gone in depth on the show about the slow and steady moves of UN Agenda 21. And would you talk about the WEF's Great Reset and the overlay with the new great age?
Well, the shift from the current dying great age to the new great age, which the elite are dedicating to their Dark Lord, and I refer to the emerging great age as the new great age of Satan. the transition you can think of as a great reset in itself, the grand celestial clock, the great year is resetting. We've reached 12 and we're about to move, the clock is about to tick off into an entirely new cycle. And so the elite have been timing the implementation of their new world order to this transition of the ages, to the this grand shift. And we can rightly think of that as the Great Reset. And so to find one of the premier economic entities, bodies in the world, introducing an initiative that they are calling the Great Reset at this time is, you could view that as more of the traditional mockery that we've encountered and discussed in past programs, and that we find in the events of September 11th and in many other mass rituals and staged events, the dark humor, the in plain sight, in your face mockery, and of course there's a very serious aspect to it, that they're transforming the planet into global economies and societies into their vision for the new great age, a technocratic tyranny, global tyranny. In a way, it's an inside joke, but then it encompasses a very real effort that's being kicked into high gear at this very precise moment in time. And, we can understand why they've chosen this moment in time to push so hard for the full implementation of the new world order, the one world order, is that there's a great reset in time, and they're implementing their great socioeconomic reset to correspond to that.
It must be kind of weird to have anticipated this in your writings. What does that feel like?
Well, I won't say it's gratifying, because it's all depressing and horrifying, but to have identified some of the markers in advance, and at least I guess have the satisfaction of knowing I didn't waste my time and that I wasn't wrong, but I wouldn't say that I'm pleased about it. And a lot of other people, and a lot of other sources contributed to my understanding of what was coming, and a lot of people have, called this new world order, the emergence of this new world, and a lot sooner than I did. But to have gotten some of the specifics correct, I guess is validating on some level, and I just hope that we can all survive the introduction of this new vision for humanity.
I agree. Going back to D.C. for a minute, when Congress passed the Act of 1871, it created a separate corporate government for the District of Columbia. This allowed the District of Columbia to operate as a corporation outside the Constitution. From what I understand, London, the Vatican, Washington, D.C. are known as the Trinity of Babylon: finance, religion, and military. The three cities are sovereign entities. The architecture and layout of all three cities are heavily coded. There's a history at the location of the Capitol building. In our many interviews with Peter Shampoo, author of Gaia Matrix, he mentioned that the site was originally a Native American meeting location and ley line intersection, essentially a Native American Congress. He says ley lines are the Earth's nervous system. They're waveforms that spiral and undulate, similar to our own DNA. If these lines are kinked or blocked, they can create a geopathic condition affecting DNA, health, and social peace. What did you find regarding the occult significance of the January 6th date and the Capitol building event?
Yes, so there are many sites of significance, locations of religious structures and monuments placed on top of sites that were previously utilized by Native cultures and early traditional cultures. And that is could be seen as the elite's way of kind of hijacking the nervous system of the Earth for their own purposes and energizing their own plans and schemes. And a lot of times we, in the buildings and the sacred spaces that are that we utilize today, buildings that we find there are of course constructed according to sacred geometry and incorporating astrologically auspicious dates for the laying of the cornerstone and various other aspects of the construction of these sites. And then events that take place there are almost always timed to astrological events or the dates of special occasions, prior occurrences, prior rituals, false flags. And the January 6th date was not a random date. It was chosen for the siege of the Capitol because of its traditional association with the Dionysian revels, the festival, the revels that were held in honor of the Greek god Dionysius, and whose Roman counterpart was Bacchus. And most of your listeners have probably heard the term Bacchanalia, the rowdy celebrations, carnival-like celebrations that were held to Bacchus Dionysius, when the revelers would go marauding through the streets and breaking all sorts of social norms and wreaking havoc. And of course, that's what we witnessed in Washington, D.C. on January 6th, but it was not just a bunch of MAGA supporters going wild. There was a deeper significance to that, and it was not just the telltale signs were, there were more of them. It was not just that this event took place on a specific date of significance. There were other symbolic elements that we'll discuss very soon.
Kent, I suspect that the murder of Alicia Babbitt may be a symbolic ritual in the death of the archetypal feminine principle, such as Columbia, Isis, or the Lady of Freedom. I'm convinced it's a flag that is false. Many recall the Buffalo hat-wearing character who was positioned and framed in many photographs on the floor of the U.S. Senate. Not only was he used as a scapegoat to discredit the child trafficking epidemic and adrenochrome harvesting in Rolling Stone magazine, but you've noticed something many have missed. Would you please talk about this person's role in the ritual?
I would be glad to, and before I discuss that, we've looked at a couple of videos and photographs and noted some really odd things about this character, even before we look at the symbolic elements associated with him. And there are multiple photographs where he's surrounded by just a whole slew of photographers. There may be two or three other people in the halls of Congress with him, but he certainly seems to have gotten superstar attention, you know, as if it was pre-planned, and it just seems hard to believe that he was he just accumulated that entourage of professional photographers just by walking through the building. And the building itself was under siege, and yet you had all of the photographers in the exact locations where he visited. So that's odd. And then he was part of a crowd that had stormed the U.S. Capitol, and then he was just allowed to leave, just walk out. And is interviewed outside the Capitol just shortly after having occupied the seat of the presiding officer in the U.S. Senate. And so that's very odd. There are a lot of things that are very odd about this character if you start to look into his past a little bit more. But as far as the role that he played that day, he was not just a MAGA Trump supporter lunatic walking around in a fur hat, although he certainly was that. But then on top of that, there were some various and very interesting symbols that he had incorporated into his person, his outfit, the tattoos he had on his chest. That of course he was bare chested, and the tattoos were displayed for all the world to see. One of them is very strongly associated with the Norse god Odin. We talked a bit about this being the date of Dionysian revels, and so you might say, well, you know, it's all we know which god was being honored. So, you know, why are you mentioning Odin? And you and I have talked about this previously, and we find in other many of the other false flags and mass rituals, public rituals, that there's a mixing and a matching. The global elite into these mass rituals they're not super serious events. They're serious, but they incorporate elements of dark humor, and they'll mix and match. And you might find a reference to one god or goddess. They will layer them. They will. One element might be an homage to one god or goddess, or you know, important date on the occult calendar, and then you might have another one that's mixed in with it. And that's just part of their modus operandi. But there were multiple aspects of the hat guy's persona that tied to Odin, and in general, you could see that as a reference to the horned god, and see that, you know, the lineage from, you know, ancient Egypt all the way through Norse mythology and religion, you know, to current contemporary times. You know, it's all a testament to Satan, Lucifer, the Dark Lord, and a way of honoring the you know, the dark powers and the dark spirit that inhabits this world. So it's you know, it's all about paying due testament to the Dark One and to the dark powers. And there were other aspects of the hat guy's presence there that day, that there were things that he did that were of symbolic nature that, you know, to the casual, the untrained eye, or, you know, casual observer might not have necessarily meant anything special. But if you knew, if you understood the significance of the date, what he represented, and then what he did or was allowed to do, occupy, you know, walk, you know, strutting into the floor, to the chamber of the U.S. Senate, and then walking unimpeded up and taking the seat of power in the Senate chamber in the capital of the most powerful country in the history of the world, then you see that that is just much more than some reveler making his way into the U.S. Capitol and having some fun. There was certainly an element of humor to it, but then there was a deeper, darker, more serious message. And so, it didn't immediately occur to me, and it took a while for me to kind of process this and parse it, and to realize that there was, you know, as usual, just more than meets the eye. And even those of us that have a trained eye can certainly, in the moment, at the time that an event like this is unfolding, just be absolutely clueless and think, okay, this is just more for the daily news, and not even it just the signs and the symbols just kind of go right over our heads, and then it takes a while for us to go back and assess, and, you know, for some of these things to emerge as the markers that can help us understand what the deeper scripting that was taking place, and help us understand that the depth to which these types of events can be and are frequently scripted, and they appear as just, of course, you know, there's always the cover story and the conventional explanation, and just sort of on the surface news value of something like this, and it's oftentimes it's so sensational people just don't even bother to look any deeper, and it just there's so much going on that, you know, why would you even think there was a deeper level? But a lot of times we find that there is, and of course that's not true in every case, and that it is true very frequently, much more frequently than people want to, you know, would want to acknowledge or to understand. But, you know, trying to figure out which event is scripted, which is truly a pre-planned, very elaborate mass ritual, and which events just sort of happened, you could spend all day every day trying to make those types of assessments. But famous quote, and I forget who to attribute it to, but it's things do not happen, they're made to happen. And that might have been a Supreme Court justice. But in any case, I think that's more frequently the case than we would be comfortable acknowledging. So this event, you know, at first it just, when I saw the news stories, it just, nothing clicked, and I didn't think anything was suspicious about it. And it was just over the course of several weeks that it began to kind of unfold in my consciousness, and the symbol sort of emerged into my consciousness, and I was able to kind of piece together the scripts for the capital siege. But it can certainly be tedious. Have to be familiar with the symbols, the mythology, and the sort of the zeitgeist that the global elite are incorporating. And it's just all about, in a lot of instances, just good old-fashioned mischievousness and evil.
I noticed the symbolism regarding, you know, perceived murder of Alicia Babbitt, and I respectfully say that I don't mean any malicious intent there. I'm not trusting what I'm seeing. And the Kamala Harris sculpture in glass placed by the reflecting pond. And I just thought that juxtapositioning was interesting, and it's sending a message.
I think you're exactly right. We've both viewed a video that provided a pretty good breakdown of the shooting, and it certainly had a lot of the hallmarks of a staged crisis program. That a lot of times you'll see these events that are put on to rehearse mass casualty events, and you know, to help the first responders learn how to cope, and so these. That type of illusory tactic, that type of deception, has now begun to be incorporated on a regular basis into false flags, and we have discussed the telltale signs and evidence that was present in the Boston bombings and Sandy Hook. And so once you do an assessment and analysis of the footage from that shooting, there are just some things that really stand out, fit some of the patterns that we've seen in other events, well-documented crisis scenarios. Again, would echo what you're saying, that if this young woman, if her life was indeed taken in this manner, a terrible tragedy, but we also have a sixth sense about these kinds of things that we've honed over time, and there's some things that are very suspicious about the way that the event unfolded, and things that you can view in the video, and the roles that people were playing and the things that they were doing. You know, I would encourage listeners to take a little bit further note of that and maybe view some of the footage themselves. But it at face value, it just appears to be a senseless tragedy. Certainly avoidable, but there may be something more there. If not, then you know, we could certainly be wrong about that. But it certainly has a lot of the characteristics of other events that we've got a high degree of certainty were staged by crisis actors, or at least incorporated crisis actors. And that's not to say that no one died at the Boston bombings or were seriously injured, or at Sandy Hook. There's elements of deception that are frequently woven into false flag attacks, staged events, to create uncertainty, specifically for the purpose of creating doubt, creating numerous rabbit holes that investigators, conspiracy theorists will go down. You know, it's part of, at the bottom of it all, it's part of a psychological warfare operation, and that it is utilizing misinformation, disinformation, and other tactics of deception and distraction to keep you from figuring out what's going on. And we understand the total effectiveness of that type of strategy just by, you know, looking back to the assassination of John F. Kennedy and how many questions still remain to this day. The year 2013 marked the 50th anniversary of JFK assassination and what has been referred to as the Killing of the King public ritual. And if you listen to and watched the coverage of the 50th anniversary or the Golden Jubilee of the Killing of the King, the questions that they were asking, that the mainstream media was asking and posing to their audiences, were essentially the same as in the weeks following the assassination in 1963. very little progress in terms of the public official discourse and investigation had been made in 50 years. And, of course, investigative researchers, independent researchers, have made tremendous strides in understanding the nature of the event, who was involved, what happened, how it was covered up. But as far as the public discourse, it had advanced half an inch. And so the lesson that we can learn from that in more contemporary events, more recent false flags, staged events, is that they are doing these sorts of things and going to these sorts of efforts involving crisis actors and misinformation, disinformation, because it works. It works so effectively that you can have, in the case of the JFK assassination, almost no forward progress on understanding the event over the course of half a century.
Right, to this day. And we got a beep on the line, and it's kind of been happening recently. And I want to say, if it's a real person doing it, that I'm wearing headphones and it's pretty loud. So if you, you know, would be mindful of that, we'd appreciate it. Michael Hoffman, one of the authors that you and I both know, he's been a guest on the show, and yourself, mention one of the elements here for these rituals to work is to have the attention visually of the masses of people on images and symbols, and even people wearing particular clothing or, as we've pointed out, a tattoo. And that is important for the ritual because it's seeping into the consciousness and the subconscious of the collective society. And that's how the rituals begin to manifest. And I think that's important to understand as just a basis for comprehending what's going on here in these mass rituals. Kent, in your research decoding the January 6th event, you found the number 25,600. Please tell listeners about this.
Certainly, and to your point with the symbolism, the listeners, you know, should understand that they're not just graphic images, and they're not merely just visual images, that the philosophy, the occult understanding behind employing these symbols and embedding them within our consciousness is that they operate at a subconscious psychic level, perhaps a multidimensional level, and they operate, their archetypal images invoke various functions and powers, and that, so that by queuing them up in our consciousness, and especially on the mass level, that these symbols, and they're often combined in very specific combinations and utilized in very specific ways, that at the subconscious level, they're operating within our conscious operating system and doing things at a level that we're completely unaware of, and making changes to our operating system and transforming us in ways that we don't fully understand. It's almost a transmutation of consciousness that they're running these symbols through our computer, our consciousness, a conscious operating system. And so it's not just, oh, hey, this guy's got a tattoo and, you know, the Twin Towers with the Pillars of Hermes. These symbols are very powerful symbols that touch us at a very, very deep, a multidimensional level, and they perform very specific tasks within our consciousness depending on the intent of those employing them. And so there's very real ritual magic at work here, and we have to keep that in mind, that it's not just a tattoo. It's not just, you know, the Pentagon is a symbol of the, you know, America's might, America's military power, and even a traditional symbol within the occult and the dark arts. There's much more going on there. So that's good observation, and Michael Hoffman does write very effectively about that. The obviously, there's symbol, and then there's number. Both are extremely important, and what I've found and been struck by in many instances is there's just always so much more there than you would intuit, or there's so much occult thought and philosophy and history associated with the numbers and the symbols that are employed in the public rituals and in psychological warfare operations that go along with them. And so we tend to assign maybe a little bit more validity to the use of symbols, and we understand that a little bit better. But the numbers, you know, a lot of people, when they start encountering someone who's trying to explain the importance of this number, that number, people start to turn off when you pull out the numbers. And of course, in 9/11, there were the numbers associated with the planes, the flights that they were of paramount importance, were just foundational elements of the 9/11 mass ritual. But you have to get in and really understand the importance of each number, the system within which they're imbued with this power, what the numbers represent. So we frequently find number associated with ritual and with mass ritual in the public, and, you know, hidden in plain sight rituals. And that was indeed the case on January 6th. I had previously written about the number 25,600 in context of the unfolding of the Great Age and the length of the Great Age. And the number that you hear most often for the length of the Great Age is 20, you know, it's about 26,000 years, which is correct. But the figure 25,600, I note in a number of locations in both books, is of particular importance, being the product of 16 and 1600. And I'm not going to elaborate on too much, except to note both of those, of course, have long history and their significance with the numbers, but they are incorporated into the Washington, D.C. star map in a very profound way, marking the center of the 10-mile square in which Washington, D.C. is laid out. In fact, are associated with the location of the White House, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, and the cross street of 16th Street. And in the giant star map in D.C., the location of the White House at the center of the square construct it signifies something central to unfolding of the Great Age and the timing of the Great Age, its beginning and its ending. And so it's more than number. It indicates a very specific location in the heavens associated with the Milky Way galaxy, and there's a configuration of the astrological signs Scorpio and Sagittarius, and the way of tracking the Great Age, and when the sun enters into the Great Rift, that signifies the end of the Great Age. And without really getting into a lot of detail about that, the point is that the numbers are signifiers, indicate something very specific, a very specific location, very specific point in time. These numbers are found within the Book of Revelation in the Bible. Perhaps our last show that I did with you, the unfolding of the Great Age is encoded plainly in the Book of Revelation in at least two different or three different ways and three different locations, and the entire book is replete with astrotheological symbolism and just direct references to the zodiac and the unfolding of the Great Age. If you are familiar with the signs of the zodiac, and then there are many associations that go along with that, including gemstones and of the zodiac are found in chapter 21. And essentially what you have in at least two locations in the Book of Revelation is an encoding of the zodiacal calendar, of the deep wisdom of the passage of the Great Age, the Platonic year, that many other cultures had a deep awareness of and built entire mythologies around and incorporated into their own religious teachings in a multitude of ways. And so it shouldn't surprise us to find that in the Hebrew scriptures, but it is there. It's not, you know, we're not talking about a Bible code that you have to run an algorithm on to pull out of the text, and not that I'm discounting perhaps a reality, but it's not what we find here. It's not what you have to do here. It's not, you don't have to jump through a bunch of, you don't have to do calculus to understand these things. And I explain this, I think, fairly clearly and succinctly in Blackjack, and then also The End, my third and fourth books, but you've got the same information in Revelation, the same elements that it encoded in two different chapters, and that very same information, those same numbers, that same symbolism, the references are found at the very heart of the layout of our nation's capital, and that is not by coincidence. I've not done the best job of explaining that correspondence here, but using plenty of illustrations and hopefully very clear language in the books, I make it entirely evident that there is an enormously significant reason why those are the same. You find in our nation's capital and in the Bible, the most widely read religious book in the world, you find these numbers that correspond. And in fact, this information, this knowledge, is mirrored in a lot of ways, in a number of ways, within the calendar and the symbolism and the myths of the Mayan culture.
What you found as well is that for each soldier now stationed in Washington, D.C., which many people have questions about, why is this happening? Yes, you make the case that they're protecting the White House from insurrection and the stolen election and everything. But that number is also significant. Would you tell listeners about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Keeping in mind that numbers are often themselves, you have to unpack them. And so the number 25,600 may not seem that significant, but it's what it represents. It's what it's a product of. It's the knowledge that is embedded within that number that is significant, and it relates directly to the passage of the Great Age, the length of the Great Age, the number of years within it, which is, in this knowledge, is within the Book of Revelation and the street layout of Washington, D.C. I didn't initially catch it. The news stories, they said about 26,000 soldiers, and I thought, well, that's kind of interesting because that is the length of the average length of the Great Age you hear most commonly. So I wonder how they decided to send 26,000 troops from all 50 states and four provinces or U.S. territories to the Capitol. Why have they gone to that much effort when there are thousands and thousands of active military troops in bases all around Washington, D.C., and there's just a multitude of law enforcement there to begin with. How did they arrive at the number 26,000? Well, if you look at the news stories, you search the news stories, the number that you find the most frequently by far is the 25,600 number. I hate to admit that it took a week or two for the light bulb to go off. One point, it dawned on me that is the very specific number that I've incorporated into two books. It was so evident and in your face that it went right by me, just like when I was watching the news coverage of the Capitol siege on January 6th. There's just stuff that was in hindsight, it was pretty clear, it was pretty obvious, but it went right over my head to begin with. And the same way with the number, and so the massive number of troops and to begin with, and why they were all sent there, and why from all 50 states, which that seems to be making a statement in and of itself. Why would you pull troops from every single state in the country? But so there's suspicious aspects before you even look at any of the symbolism and any of the ritual components. But it is the central number associated with the length of the Great Age, as I've documented fully in a number of instances in a couple of different books, and an unsettling realization that they've essentially just pulled in the number of National Guard troops necessary to represent, in human terms, the number of years in the Great Age. Here we are at the Great Reset, and they pull in exactly the number of the troops that one individual corresponding to one year within the Great Age, and stand back and you think, well, that's a lot of time and energy and effort poured into something. Why would they do that? Can this be a proper interpretation, or is this just coincidence? And I guess on some level, I still want to think these kinds of things are coincidence. But if you really understand how they operate, the scale and scope of how they do what they do on a routine basis, what they subject us to, how committed they are to their occult dark arts. It's still unsettling and alarming, but you'll say, okay, well, I understand why they did it and understand what it represents, and it's is another instance of something that it appears to be one thing on the surface, but in actuality, there's a much deeper reason why this occurred in this specific way, this specific time, in this specific place. And so you look at all of the factors, and then you begin to understand why 25,600. And there's still questions about why they're there and, you know, how many, why they have so many. And I think some of them have been sent home. But that specific number, that specific marker should have hit me over the head immediately, and it didn't. If you dissect it, it is really a recapitulation of the great age, the moment we're at, this very specific moment in history and on the occult calendar, one-for-one correspondence between number of years past and number of troops on the street in the capital of the most powerful country in the world.
Yes, nice catch, Kent. I didn't see it. One soldier representing a year in the Great Procession is interesting, and then taken from all 50 states, I understand. So that's interesting, especially in the context of each state has its own Masonic importance and location and frequency and all of that. We're coming down to the end of the show. I wanted to get your thoughts on the cryptocracy's effort to enact a tiered suppression based on the level of radical awakening within our society.
Well, the part of the stated program that they're exposing us, and this is, you know, Michael Hoffman has written very effectively about this, but they are not just exposing us to more and more occult information and knowledge with, you know, all of these symbols and numbers operating at a subconscious level, you know, having the intended effect of the operators, and, you know, and we're, for the most part, the masses are completely unaware that these operations are taking place. We're becoming consciously more and more aware that this is occurring, and we have some rudimentary, more and more people have a rudimentary understanding that something is being done behind the scenes without our knowledge. They have some inkling that something is occurring, but they don't begin to fully understand it. This is all part of the plan, the cryptocracy's plan, to you know, for the transmutation of human consciousness and pushing us to evolve into a species that is more, or devolve into a species that is more malleable, where we're disconnected from faith, family, community, we're terrified individual members of a herd that can be moved to any location at a moment's notice for whatever purpose, manipulated, oppressed, exploited. The more we wake up, of course, it would seem that the more they have to try to suppress that occult knowledge. That's our general intuition, is that, you know, that more people are waking up, so they have to clamp down on us harder and harder. Well, that's really part of the whole pre-programmed effort, this intentional exposure to more and more occult symbolism and esoteric, and that is operating at a subconscious level. We see, as you referred to, the tiered suppression that is ostensibly a response to this increase and awareness of manipulation of the masses by, you know, through the dark arts and black magic. But you dig even further into that whole phenomenon and unfolding, you know, unfortunately, it's all part of a master plan. So it gives the cryptocracy, the global elite, ostensibly cover to implement further draconian measures to control the masses. But They're really responsible for our awakening in the first place. I don't claim to fully understand it and everything that's taking place, and but they're enabling this awakening and at the same time taking measures to suppress any real action or any true meaningful significance based on it. It's necessary for the processing of humanity and for the transmutation of our consciousness, but then it's also giving them a all the rationale they need, if they need any at all, for cracking down on us more and more, because you can't have the cattle running loose and getting all over the place. So it's a more complicated situation than I have understood, and I don't claim to fully understand it. But there's at this very precise moment in time, we have the engine of tyranny being started and cranked up to full speed, to full throttle, and all of these various tactics and techniques being employed against us. And it's at the moment of the Great Reset. I think we can view that not just as a reset in time and a reset of socioeconomic values and approaches, per the World Economic Foundation, but it's also a reset in terms of of humanity itself and how aware we are. And so on the one hand, we're experiencing an awakening, and then in response to that, we're being bludgeoned and dumbed down. Ever more sophisticated and harsh measures are being taken to create a profound spiritual amnesia within humanity.
Two steps forward, one step back, and
absolutely,
certainly has that motion to it. Our guest is Kent Bain. We're talking about his recent write-up titled The Great Reset, A Mass Ritual in Motion. It can be found on his site, themostdangerousbloginthewrld.wordpress.com. And Kent is also the author of The Most Dangerous Book in the World, 9/11 as a Mass Ritual, Most Dangerous, A True Story, and Blackjack, The Dawning of the New Great Age of Satan, and of course, the book The End. Kent, it's been really a delight to have you back on the show, and I definitely would want to have you back on very soon so we can continue to plot where things are at and where these false flags are going to occur as we go through this year.
Well, I will look forward to that, and I always enjoy our discussions and being able to share these observations with your listeners.
Thank you again very much for being on In Other News.
Thank you.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.